Welcome to the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast, where it's all about slashing your debt, slashing your taxes, and creating a liberated lifestyle. And now, your host, who has a vast collection of vintage DC and Marvel comic books, and ironically lives in Minnesota, where his favorite NBA team, the LA Lakers, originated, Dave Denniston.
And this podcast, my friends, isn't possible without having some generous sponsorship. I'd especially like to thank our latest sponsor, Plastic. That's P-L-A-S-T-I-Q, Plastic. These people help to keep your business running smoothly. Make sure to check them out, plastiq.com/physicians. Again, that's Plastic with a Q. Hello, my friends. This is Dave Denniston, and welcome back to another episode of the Freedom Formula for Physicians podcast. Well, as you know, we have the brand new book, The Young Physician's Guide to Money and Life. And this book is one that I certainly had a hand in, but it's been a joy collaborating with others. I mentioned last week about the story behind Amanda. And another one of the contributors that contributed to the content is John Appino. Now, John didn't co-author the book, but he certainly contributed a lot of content. And the rest of this podcast, John was a past podcast guest as well, which you can glean from that particular episode. We'll make sure to link it in the show notes. John and I spent, two hours recording, me just kind of interviewing him and asking him about contracts and things that you should watch out for. And so that whole section was inspired by this interview that you are going to be hearing with John. So I hope that you love it and enjoy it, and I guarantee you there will be a few nuggets that you want to pick out of it. And of course, I would be remiss if I didn't mention that you could pick up the book by going to drfreedompodcast.com/docbook. drfreedompodcast.com/docbook, or you can text docbook, docbook, to 44222. Again, you can text docbook to 44222. And now, here is the interview with John.
All right, John Appino, we are going to talk today about the 10 commandments of physician employment contracts. So, John, I know that you have listed down here 10 commandments you need to know before signing each employment contract. And I want to break those down so people can understand what the heck this is all about, the gotchas, and the things that they do. I know you've reviewed, thousands of contracts at this point? What would you say, John?
Yes, believe it or not, we think staring at contracts and analyzing deals and digging into the weeds of these things every single day is it's a ton of fun. So it's 100% of what we do, and we've done thousands of them for sure.
So just break it down for me real quick. What are three or four parts of contracts that are really common that physicians should be aware of?
We kind of break it down into three kind of core groups. One is the overall legal structure. Let's make sure that it lines up, obviously. Most of the time, that's pretty standard, there's no issues with how that part of the contract is set up. We also look at the overall benefits, and obviously each of these buckets has many buckets underneath it, but the overall benefits of the deal, from the malpractice insurance to what type of disability and life insurance and retirement plan they have, those are things that are all very important and vary from one position to the next. And then obviously the compensation structure. So how do they get paid? What are the nuances around the payments? What do they need to know to avoid having any disputes around how they're paid? And then obviously how it fares and how it compares to what the going rate is. So if a physician, practices a specialty in a certain geography under a certain, type setting in a private group or an employed physician, is what the employer is offering, is it line up with what that area, what the market in that area should bear? And obviously, physicians trained to be clinicians, not to really know and understand some of those facts and figures. And that's kind of our job. So we look at his three buckets: benefits, compensation, and then the legal portion of it, of course. And then each of those buckets has multiple different subsets in it.
So if we look at this, you know, something like location, well, how would a physician know whether something's good or bad, right? I mean, aren't these things just standard contracts? It's just some boilerplate they throw out there? You know, what's good from bad?
Yeah, so do you say location?
Yeah, location is
specifically.
Of
so like location as part of the contract. So, you know, a lot of employers, they have one location, you know, and so it might be important. It might not to have a specified location. Some employers may be wanting to expand in the future. Some may have a general hub and have lots of outreach clinics. And so, you know, having a defined location is something that we feel is, you know, is of the utmost importance. And obviously in our position, we have taken phone calls from physicians who have, you know, been in jobs where they didn't have it specified. And they were asked, or maybe told is a better word to use, to go to a different location. And maybe that hospital's not set up the way they want it to, or maybe it's inconvenient for their personal life, or there's a variety of different things that can come up. And so we think it's very important to specify and have very good expectations around the location. It can also bleed into the non-compete and how extensive and large the non-compete is. So if there's a non-compete that says this, you know, this non-compete is a certain mile radius from each office, if they have one office or five offices, that may greatly vary the language or the restrictions post-termination. Whether they work at that office or they're not, again, every contract's different, and it just varies on how it's worded. But something as specific as having a defined location can be very impactful to a physician's contract.
Now, how do they know in terms of, like, geography? You know, like, let's say other physicians in Iowa or Minnesota or New York or Los Angeles, you know, what's good and what's bad? How would they know in terms of compensation how that would compare on a scale?
Yeah, so we just gave a lecture on this in Detroit or in Ann Arbor this last week. And it's funny because you can go online, just like with any position, and you can search, you know, what's the compensation for X job. And you get lots of just general public data. What we have seen is that the data that's out there in the public for physician compensation is dramatically off. I mean, you can go to the internet and search, and I think you'll find information. I think the accuracy of the information is dramatically flawed. And so if we figure out, so where do we get ours? Well, number one, we've done thousands of deals, so we just have a good gut opinion, which can be very important. But we also purchase data. There's a couple of large companies that aggregate and take survey data, which they spend lots and lots of money, which means they charge companies like us lots and lots of money. And we actually purchase the same data sets as some of the large hospitals do with how they set their compensation. So when we share that information with the physician can easily see that they're being paid at the median or at the 75th percentile or below the 25th percentile. They can see what their collections should be or their RVU productions or their signing bonuses or vacation time, because we utilize and have the same data that the hospitals do. In addition, we also provide our clients with our internal survey data. So we have our own raw database here at Contract Diagnostics, and we're able to take that information and share it back with the physician in a blinded fashion, of course. But the chances are, if you're doing an anesthesiology private practice, you know, right outside Minneapolis, Minnesota, we've done a lot of those deals. And so we should be able to tell you not only what the national survey that's, you know, regionally and state specific, but also what positions in towns like that, in areas like this, go for. And so we can get pretty specific, which is why it's important that they have somebody on their team that knows, you know, what these compensation rates are, not just a Google search or not just something that says, you know, we feel that this is good. The one thing that we do see, and this is very, there's lots of data, lots of publications on this, is discrepancies in pay from a American trained physician and an internationally trained physician, as well as from a male to a female physician. So there are lots of nuances of how physicians get paid and how the structure can be very different for a similar job depending on who the individual physician is. We do see bigger discrepancies in some of the surgical specialties for male and females. So obviously it's always important to make sure that you're paid at your market rate. But we do see discrepancies, and the data out there supports that there are discrepancies between a male and a female physician for the exact same job. And it's significantly higher discrepancy rates in surgical specialties.
So is that something where, let's say normally a female is at 200K for a pediatrician and the male's at 220, should the female try and negotiate to get the male rates?
Absolutely. We feel that if a market supports a certain salary, whether or not it's a male or a female or an American or a foreign trained physician, then the physician should get whatever that market rate is. If they're providing a valuable service to a clinic or a hospital, they should get the most out of the proposition that they can. So we encourage, I mean, depending on the deal, of course, we encourage almost all of our clients to negotiate and ask for higher rates, whether it be through a signing bonus or through a base salary or through a production bonus or through something else. There's lots of different ways to sometimes make up those gaps.
Yeah, so they see that salary, and I'm sure one of the first things that you have here is the first commandment, they shall understand how to get out. Tell me about that. Why is that important?
Well, you know, obviously most people's intent with going into a position are to stay long-term. In case that doesn't work out, it's good to have an understanding up front on how to get out of the contract. So do you have a no-cause termination? How can you be fired? Are there specific things in the contract with how you could be terminated or how the contract could end? So does it automatically renew, or do you guys have to renew it every single year? Those are all good questions that we would ask, and we would want a physician to know how they get out of a specific contract.
And now let's take a moment for a quick commercial break. My friends, when it comes to running your medical practice, you are the boss, and it's tough running those day-to-day operations and making sure there's enough money to pay the bills. And that's why Plastiq can help you with your business and cash flow, making everything run smoothly. And that's because Plastiq, that's Plastiq with a Q, lets you pay virtually any business expense with a credit card, from suppliers to contractors to your commercial lease. And you're still earning cash back. You're earning points, you're earning rewards every time you use Plastiq. Go to plastiq.com/physicians today. And when you sign up and make your first payment up to $1,000, Plastiq will waive the transaction fee. That's PlasTiq. Again, my friends, PlasTiq, Plastiq with a Q, .com/physicians. And now, back to the show.
Okay. Number two, thou shalt understand all forms of compensation, salary, signing, benefits, production, retirement, etc. Tell us about that.
So physician compensation can be as simple as you get paid a dollar amount per shift or a dollar per hour. So you work more shifts, you work more hours, very easy, very straightforward. It could be a base salary. So you have a job and you'll get paid X dollars for the job. Or it could be, you know, we've seen compensation structures that go on for 20 pages in a contract, and there could be multi different layers to quality bonus and ACO bonuses or penalties. There could be things that are about, you know, production bonuses and about citizenship bonuses and about, you know, I mean, all types of things. You could have extra compensation for call in addition to a base salary. And when you sign the contract, there may be a signing bonus. There could be retention bonuses. There could be student loan payments that are built into some of these contracts or relocation agreements. And so there's a lot of different moving pieces to some of these. And, you know, it used to be where a physician would show up and, you know, if they brought in $100 in revenue, you would pay your overhead and then you would take whatever's left. That would be your income. And those days are still there in some groups, but even in those groups, there's still a lot of different, you know, factors that play into the compensation. So they're seemingly confusing and getting more complex. And I think as medicine changes and evolves, I think they're going to get more and more complex with more things like quality bonuses and different types of programs. So
absolutely. Number three, they shall know the location and schedule, including call and if it can change. Break that down.
So like we said earlier, we like to know the location of the physician's practice, if it's multiple, if it's just one, if it can change, if it can change unilaterally by the direction of the employer, or if it has to be agreed to by the physician. We like to have details of the schedule. So what schedule are they signing up for? Obviously, it can be more important with certain fields than others. Most physicians don't get into medicine to punch in at one time and punch out at one time.
Right.
But we do see some specialties, for example, a hospitalist. So is your shift 7 days in a row and 7 days off? Is your shift from 7 in the morning until 7 at night? Or is it from 7 at night until 7 in the morning? Are there swing shifts that you may participate in? How many shifts in a month do you do? What happens if you do additional shifts? So there can be a lot more to the contract than something that says, you know, you'll work for us and we'll pay you X dollars. And so, you know, so having these things specified and the expectations set up front, we feel is of the utmost importance.
Absolutely. I imagine a lot of that stuff can shift over time. You know, what if they change their minds? How does that work? For example, with the employer saying, oh, we'd like you to be over here, here, and here instead. Does the contract need to be revised when that happens?
Yeah, it depends on how it's worded. You know, we have, in our position, with the amount of physicians that we've worked with, we've heard a lot of, we've helped a lot of people in a lot of really, really, you know, good positive ways. And I would assume that we have lots of happy physicians out there that are working under great contracts and with a great employer and everything is good. We'll probably never hear from them ever again. But we do hear from people who maybe didn't have us review their first contract, and they showed up and they didn't have specified locations, so the office asked them to show up to a different location. And maybe that, you know, for a hospitalist, it could be a closed ICU or an open ICU situation. Maybe the location just isn't where you want to be. So from a commuting standpoint, it's less than ideal. Maybe you just don't like the patient type at a certain facility that's more higher end or more lower end. And so, you know, so there's all these different things that could come into place if there's no control or no definition around things like the location and the schedule, and obviously including call. You would throw call in there as well. You know, do you take call? Is it equal among everybody? Do you have a cap on your call? What happens if people leave and get to take more call? Do you get paid for it? All things that are obviously important in contracts, and in too many of them, they just remain undefined.
Mm-hmm. I totally see that. And then we have this word non-compete. Thou shall understand all the non-competes, non-solicitation, non-interference, non-disparagement. What's that all about?
So physicians look at these things and they obviously don't like them. We call these non-provisions. You know, it can be a non-disparagement, it can be a non-disclosure, it can be a non-solicitation or a non-compete. It's basically saying what you will not do either during or after the term. So, you know, a non-disparagement just says that you won't speak negatively about the employer. You know, a non-disclosure says you're not going to disclose any confidential information for the most part. A non-solicitation is typically worded where you can't solicit patients or employees after your termination. So, you know, if you decide to go work somewhere else, you can't take employees with you. You can't solicit the patients that you served or the patients under the employer. And then the non-compete is what everyone kind of digs into. So obviously, you know, when the contract ends, you know, can you go get a job at the next place or can you not? And unfortunately, a lot of employers restrict physicians on what they can do post-termination. So a typical non-compete would have a radius, you know, a mileage radius, so 5 miles from the hospital for a defined number of years or months. And the physician could not work. So a typical non-compete may say, you know, upon termination for any reason, the physician cannot work for 2 years within 10 miles of our hospital. And obviously that means if you quit or if you get fired or if you no longer work there for whatever reason, you have to find a job that's greater than that specified 10 miles, at least for the next 2 years. And obviously, depending on the market and depending on the location, metropolitan or rural, depending on the specialty, they can be very impactful and very restrictive, or they could be nearly irrelevant. it just depends on, you know, how everything is set up. But obviously the non-compete is something that everybody should understand, not only the mileage or the radius or the restriction, geography and the time frame, but also how it's in effect. And is it in effect no matter what? Is it only if you get fired or only if you, you know, terminate without cause? Those are all things that are very important as well.
All right, my friends. Well, that wraps up the episode for today. Hope you picked up some great nuggets in our episode. And I want to make sure just to give a huge shout out to our sponsor, Plastic. Plastic with a Q. Make sure to check them out so they can help make your practice get to the next level, to keep your business running smoothly. Check them out at plastiq.com/physicians. Again, visit them right now, Plastic, plastiq.com/physicians.